Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. All right, so this week we are talking about everything but comics.
Right. Wait, what are you talking about?
Yeah, so this hopefully will not affect you guys, but we had a rare all the inclement weather shut down Diamond early yesterday. So we are getting our comics on Wednesday morning instead of Tuesday, which means that we can't do comic reviews because we don't have them in front of us.
Right.
But there are some good ones coming out.
There are some good ones coming out. It also means we'll probably cover that stuff next week. We'll have a bigger comic section next week. It also means that when you come see us on Wednesday, we will be frazzled. And
we will have just pulled all the books and we'll be bleeding from our ears.
In roughly what?
Oh, what do you think comics pulling does to people, Dave?
We will put the books in what, a quarter of the time we usually have to do it?
Yeah, something like that.
And basically what we can do in a luxurious few hours, we have to do in a span of about 30 to 45 minutes.
30 to 45 minutes, yeah. So
it's not,
well, we've done it before.
Yep.
And we believe that the book should be out for you. If you're right there at 10, you may see us running around a bit, little while.
Yes.
Or yeah. Probably till 11 or so. We play the song Under Pressure.
So, so you're getting a little behind the scenes thing here on Roguecast where you learn things that you hopefully wouldn't even notice if you come in the store.
Learn the pain.
I still hopefully it's invisible to the customers.
Yes.
But we want them to sympathize with us, Nick. We need their pity.
But it used to be. It used to be that when we got those Wednesday polls, it meant that we got comics on Thursday.
It's true.
It used to be that it was not invisible. Everybody would get comics late. It sucked. So
as it is, it's only bad for us.
It's only bad for us, which I'd prefer if it has to be one way or the other.
Yes.
I'm going to martyr myself.
Whoa. Not on the air, Randy. Not on the air.
We need the ratings. all right. So... also, I did a call out on my Facebook, but I'll call it out here too. If you are enjoying the Roguecast, we just had 101 episodes this week.
Yes.
And we don't know that a lot of people know about us. So even if they're not shopping at the store, I feel like there's a lot you can get out. We cover a lot of pop culture, a lot of comic stuff.
Yep.
So if y'all would do us a favor and share this episode on your Facebooks, on your Twitters, on your Snapchats.
Yes.
Whatever else the kids use.
Yeah, lasers.
Your Mezos, your Tep-Tups, your Duckawucka. Those are all social media sites, right?
I constantly use my Duckawucka.
Now I'm going to kill Randy.
No, whatever your social...
Review us or something?
You can also review us on iTunes.
Review us, please.
Basically, if you can help get the word out, just post this up to your friends who you know are interested in comics and geek stuff, which should be everybody, let's face it.
You know,
we would appreciate it.
When we were planning out this episode, we were kind of making a list of what we were going to talk about. It's some pretty cool stuff, I think. I feel like anybody could jump in on any given podcast, and they're going to get a little slice of a bunch of stuff they should check out.
You know, I did get a question from a friend of mine. She lives in France, and she... as an old friend from comic conventions.
Yep.
And she asked, she's like, I've been meaning to read it. She's like, I'm gonna listen to this.
I've been meaning to read it.
And she said, no, she's American. She lives in France.
She probably picked up some of the language.
The fake accent.
Yes, I'm Frenchy.
she said,
sorry.
Can I ask why an hour? Why the long podcasts? Because she's like, I you know, a lot of people listen to shorter podcasts. And we actually used to do a shorter podcast.
We did. Sure.
And we had people requesting longer podcasts.
Yeah,
so we've sort of compromised. If you like the shorter, if you're listening to us like in the car or whatever, that's why there's the show notes. That's why we break everything up with a musical. So the segments tend to be about 20 to 25 minutes, and there are like three of them a week. So you can always just listen to part of it if you want to.
Yeah. I mostly tune out the Randy parts.
Yeah. I have a similar thing.
But slightly different?
Slightly different.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Anyway, on to the news of the week, which is Gaming with Rogues is this Friday – or this Saturday on February 20th in store.
Yep.
Starts at 6:30. We'll run until about 9 o'clock. They are spotlighting Red Flags this week. And if you have a Rogue card, you can get 10% off on that game, which we've got back in stock.
The best party game going.
And if you want to come out and play other stuff, that is available too. I believe we will have someone demoing a few other games here. Snowtales and some other Cryptozoic games.
Yep.
So I believe that she will be out demoing some games as well. So come on out if you want to play some board games on Saturday night. It should be a lot of fun.
I'm very happy with how our board game get-togethers are going.
Yeah.
And I compliment our guy, Chris Jones, who's our front man there.
Yeah. Reading with Rogues, we decided to make a bit of a format change. We're announcing it here for the first time. So we're going to go to a bi-monthly book club, And what we're going to do is every month we will pick a book that someone with a rogue card can get a discount on. So
even if it's a skip month for the reading group, yeah, there's going to be a discount book.
Right. And so this month, the discount book for the rest of February and March is Descender Volume 1, the sci-fi book from Image that we all love.
Yes.
But what we're going to do is in April, we are going to do a Reading with Rogues get together, and it's going to be sort of a new monthly graphic novel club where we can talk about Descender, whatever the book we pick for April is, we haven't picked that yet, and then whatever other books you're interested in. So come in, talk graphic novels with like-minded people.
Yep. And we were thinking, like, maybe people could, like, even, like bring, here's what I'm reading.
Yeah, just absolutely.
Sort of like, so, like, as we're kind of wrapping up, or just if conversation leads astray, you can say, like, by the way, if people haven't checked out, you know, this new book from Rick Remender, or whatever they're reading, they could drop it.
Indeed. And also, we're hoping to get some reader's guides together for the graphic novels we're choosing.
Yes.
To give you some questions to spark discussion.
I'm excited to do this.
So, it should be fun. We're going to try that out starting in April, and then, of course, we'll go bi-monthly from there. Inventory sale reached its penultimate level this week.
Yep.
65% off, plus 2d6.
I've seen people getting some good stuff. I have actually picked up a few things from the table.
Yep.
Yeah.
We still have a pretty good selection of stuff out there. Next week is the last week, so you're running out of time. We're going to be closed on Monday, February 29th for our inventory, just so everybody knows. That is not a joke. It's a leap year. There actually is a February 29th.
Oh, my.
And we will be closed on that day. But prior to that, you have time to get some cool clearance stuff. And then one last thing I want to mention is Staple is right around the corner.
Yes.
It's the first Saturday, Sunday in March. We are, as always, sponsoring. We're bringing in one of the guests, and the guest list is up. The programming is up. We have stickers and bookmarks at the front if you want any of that kind of thing.
Yep, lovely designs by guest Emily Carroll.
Yes, who did Through the Woods, which is a book we all really like.
Yep, that was one of our previous reading group discussions.
Also, Gene Ha, who was one of the artists on Top 10, which is another reading group. So we're always in the forefront. We're the cutting edge.
That's right. And honestly, it is a great guest list.
Yeah. And also, if you want to go to Staple, if you want to volunteer and get a free pass to get in by helping out, you can just go to the Staple Facebook page and volunteer during the weekend, work the door, that kind of thing.
I think we've all done it at some point or another, yep. And it's actually always a good time.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we have a ton of news to get into. First thing I want to talk about is Deadpool. I know that's a sentence no one ever expected me to say. But
we're talking about Dirty Harry, the Deadpool from the 1980s.
Yes. We went out to Alamo Lakeline. One of our customers, Aaron, shout out to Aaron. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah.
Got us over at the Draft House, and we had a great time.
We set up like a little mini Deadpool convention for the store.
Yeah.
It was a Rogues Gallery pop-up store.
Yes. So we had mostly Deadpool. We had a few other things, but we also had Civil War, which sold like crazy. But we had Deadpool pop vinyls and Deadpool figures, and we basically greeted people as they came in. We gave a free Deadpool comic out.
And we gave a bunch of prize packs out for them. By the way, super nice people there.
Like, oh, yeah.
Everybody seemed to be having a great time.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
We grabbed some beers at the beer table nearby where they were demoing it. They were delicious.
Yep.
Shout out to Austin Beer Works.
Yep.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, so Alamo Lakeline is and has been our theater of choice for a while. We love those guys.
Yes.
And we had a great time out there. We're hoping to go back for some more superhero movies this summer. But we did not get to see the Deadpool movie.
No.
Well, did not get to.
Yeah.
Dave and I sort of politely turned down the screening, and Nick had to turn it down on the grounds that if he saw it without his wife, she might murder him.
Yeah. It was ironic that the person who most deserved it had to turn it down.
That said, Nick will be back later in the topic section to give you his spoiler review of the Deadpool
movie.
That's
very true. I will be.
Right now, we want to talk about the reaction to it, which is really good reviews.
Yes.
It has made $150 million U.S., $300 million international.
Yeah.
And such success that they're already talking about what does this mean for R-rated superhero movies.
Yep. It's kind of hilarious because the early predictions for the movie were supposed to be in the like $50 to $60 million range.
Nobody knew it was going to be this big.
No, nobody knew it was going to be this big.
Well, not nobody. I was pretty sure, and I think you were probably pretty sure.
I was sure it was going to do well. I'm kind of shocked at the amounts that they're bringing.
Right. Well, it like set records for like a February release and stuff, right?
Highest grossing R-rated release. It broke a lot of records.
Well, and there's they're already talking about what does that mean for R-rated superhero movies, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I've seen bandwagon articles saying, do it, everything should be rated R, and I've already seen the response articles that are like, whoa, easy.
Well, I think James Gunn had probably the best, James Gunn, Guardians director, had probably the best write-up on it, where he talked about, he basically said that there's a Hollywood suit who said in Deadline Hollywood, they said that the film is hilariously funny, and basically he's talking about how this exec is great. Here's the quote. "This film has a self-deprecating tone that's riotous. It's never been done before. It's poking fun at Marvel. That label takes itself so seriously. Can you imagine them making fun of themselves in a movie? They'd rather stab themselves." And James Gunn goes on to say that, come the fuck on, is what he says. He says, "That has got to be the dumbest fucking Hollywood exec in the history of dumb fucking Hollywood execs." This is why I love James Gunn. Because, yeah, this is stupid. People are going to take the wrong lesson from this. They're going to take the lesson of, everybody wants R-rated superheroes.
Right.
And let's do an R-rated Avengers. And it's like, no, what they want is a character done true to the character.
Right. And that is the one pattern that fits what we've seen. People love the Flash show because it feels true to Flash and it's kind of upbeat and optimistic.
Yes.
They love Arrow because it's edgier and feels closer to what the traditional Green Arrow comics.
Right.
And they loved Dark Knight and stuff like that because that edge is reflected in a lot of Batman comics.
Right, sure.
By another token, they also loved the Brave and the Bold cartoon because that reflected the Silver Age side of Batman.
Absolutely.
As it turns out, you can be true to a lot of different sides of different properties.
Yes. And that I think is the case.
And the fans will turn out.
So the big thing right now is that have they 100% confirmed it or are they just saying it? That Wolverine?
I don't think it's been 100% confirmed.
But there's certainly a lot of buzz.
They're saying, that the next Wolverine movie will be rated R. Now, I could see that, but I also, I'm one of those guys who tends to feel that it's usually not necessary.
It's not necessary, but there's been a lot of Wolverine comics over the years that definitely pushes the edge in terms of violence.
Sure.
I don't think anything beyond that, because, I mean,
you know, well, go ahead.
They're talking about Old Man Logan.
Yeah.
It is going to be Old Man. And if any Wolverine movie is going to be R-rated...
Yeah.
You want it to be Old Man Logan so they can do all the stuff with the crazy incest of the
incest
bad guys. Yeah, and I mean, they can't use Hulk.
Right.
incest Blob. I don't know who they're going to use.
Is Hugh Jackman still on board?
Yes. Okay. He said it's going to be his last Wolverine movie.
Nice. I didn't know that, but that would make sense for them to do.
But
Mark Miller does need some money.
He's had no success in Hollywood, of course. So an R-rated Old Man Logan makes sense to me. I do have to admit, I bristle a little bit about this. I'm not one of these, they should have made a PG-13 Deadpool. But I have seen a lot of teenagers and kids who wanted to see this movie. Some of them got to see it anyway. And I've heard they probably shouldn't have. Like, they made this a real R-rated movie.
Well, probably shouldn't have, but, like, I don't know. Like, when I was around the age that a lot of kids who were wanting to see Deadpool was, which I'm going to say, like, 12 and 13.
Yeah.
I was probably seeing, like, RoboCop and stuff in the theater right around then. I mean, that is a hyper-violent movie with nudity, all the swears.
It's true.
Super violent.
It's true.
I went and saw that with my brother, who was probably like, 18, and I was like 13.
Yeah.
And so I have seen one or two articles also. I haven't read these yet, but they're on the grand tradition of kids, underage kids sneaking into movies,
sure.
R-rated movies.
Yeah.
That said, I think it's mainly, that's something for that parents need to know.
Yeah.
That it's like a serious R as far as that goes.
Yeah.
But I also think that doesn't necessarily mean it's not for kids.
IR serious R, this R serious film.
Yes. But I've always liked the tradition of, if a kid manages to see it, then it's probably okay. It'd be a little weird to be taken by your mom to see it.
I think it's a little odd for Wolverine that's been a PG and PG-13 franchise to all of a sudden do an R-rated. Yeah. I think that's a mean trick to pull, but you could also argue that all the kids who saw Wolverine Origins, those poor, poor bastards, are now old enough to see an R-rated movie.
Right.
So you're not like baiting and switching necessarily.
Right.
It's just kind of growing.
And there is
kind of
growing with the audience. I would argue that there might be more of a tradition of R-rated Wolverine than there is of Deadpool.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
But that said, my argument for like a PG-13, say, with Wolverine would be that, you know, when Wolverine like cut loose on those dudes in X2, it's like, I didn't feel like I needed to see their intestines fall out for it to be a good scene. In fact, I'm kind of glad they didn't.
Right.
But there was still this amazing shot where he like leaps into the dude and you just see like the claws bust out through the back of the dude and you're like, holy crap.
Yeah, that's the thing. I will say restraint can be a great creative tool.
Yes.
We've seen this in comics. We've seen where you let people go hog wild. Sometimes you get stuff where like, I didn't need to go quite that far.
Yeah. But that said, I would broadly, I'd say Old Man Logan probably deserves an R.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I'm not as enthusiastic about it as some people oh, yes, finally. But I'm fine with it. Yeah. I'm a little worried about what it means overall.
I think I'm more in the camp of worrying what it means overall. I don't necessarily think we need an R-rated Wolverine movie. I think making a PG-13 would be fine. But again, I think Deadpool is going to create some.
Do you remember when Watchmen was the death knell of R-rated superhero movies?
Yep.
Nobody, you know, Hollywood's crazy. Yeah. They never take the right lessons from anything.
Nope.
I think the problem with Watchmen was that it was an esoteric property.
Yeah.
Most people didn't know what it was. They weren't ready for an R-rated thing. Deadpool had a pre-existing following that was ready there to assure people that this was going to be crazy, anarchic fun.
Also, Zack Snyder made an okay at best movie.
Yeah,
I know you like Watchmen, but you still wouldn't call it a great movie.
No, I definitely couldn't call it great.
But
I probably couldn't call Deadpool great either.
The other R-rated movie that everybody's talking about is, you know, they're talking about doing X-Force.
Yeah.
And people are saying that should be R-rated. And on that, I disagree.
That doesn't need to
I
be.
Think X-Force is a PG-13 concept. Yeah. It'd be like, what if the X-Men were cool and badass?
Remender's run, which I did not read, but you did, Nick.
Yeah.
You told me about some of the stuff. I remember some pretty dark stuff goes down.
It's some dark stuff.
Didn't they kill a kid or something?
Well, they killed
But he was Apocalypse.
That's like all right.
A clone child of Apocalypse.
It was the would you kill baby Hitler thing.
Right.
Yeah.
But done in superheroes.
But, I mean, all of Remender's stories had that sort of tinge of darkness. It's sort of like what Gail Simone brings to
the table. Yeah, no, I was just thinking that because they were a pretty hyper-violent team, that would actually, Old Man Logan would fit in our rating.
They were sort of they took the stance of it's better to kill your enemies than
have them pop up again to face them.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm not 100% against it, but I feel like the push for make it R-rated for sure is a little overreacted.
That's ridiculous Hollywood speak for lack of creativity.
Yeah. Finally, one little bit. It seems pretty likely we're going to get a Cable sequel or a Deadpool sequel.
Yes. It's already been greenlit.
Yeah. And people are saying Cable for Deadpool. And I don't know if that's people at Fox or if that's just people.
That's actually Deadpool.
There's
a scene that they...
What little I know, I heard about that.
Okay. So, Stephen Lang has thrown his hat in the ring. Like, he said he wants to be... And
for our listeners, Stephen Lang is...
He was the guy who was on Terra Nova.
Yeah,
what else has he been? Nick, help me, because...
It's not a great movie, but everybody probably saw Avatar. He was the mean old man, general-looking dude.
Right.
And he's played a weird... parts. He's played an assassin in a random Charlie Sheen movie called Shadow Conspiracy.
See, this is why I want Nick to give us, because Nick will know where this guy's been.
He's been in a few things. I can't remember anything else.
Very visually, he's an obvious fit.
Yep.
He literally has like the white hair, the age right, and the dude is jacked.
And he's played the military badass several times.
Yep.
I think he'd be good casting for it.
I think so too.
I think like John Hamm wanted to do it.
That's crazy talk. I love John Hamm, but Cable's not the role you put him in.
I don't know. It'd be perfect sort of bouncing, sort of stoic kind of against Ryan Reynolds.
You know who I'd put? You know, John Hamm, I'd put him in as like Archangel or one of those guys.
I don't have a strong feeling on that, but I feel like this guy is like, he's campaigning for it too.
Yep.
Yeah. There's like a Twitter hashtag and all that.
And that usually doesn't work out, does it? Actors campaigning for things.
Didn't Ryan Reynolds do a bunch of campaigning to make Deadpool happen?
Yeah, that's true. But he'd already been cast at that point. He's like, let me do this the right way.
Right. But I think they had to do that like sort of proof of concept video and stuff to sort of get it rolling. And then the fans got way behind it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that stuff works or not. But I don't know. I feel like he's probably the right choice for Cable. I feel like Ryan Reynolds riffing off of this mean old man would be the good time that people want it to be.
Yeah, I think so too.
I feel like him riffing off of him would be better than him riffing off of Ham.
So, I forgot riffing off of Ham.
Ham riff.
I had forgotten the Chimichanga thing came out of Cable Deadpool.
Yeah.
So I mentioned this because, did you already know this story, Nick?
No, I didn't know the backstory, but I saw you post about it.
I'm Facebook friends with Fabian Nicieza, which is weird for me because he was the guy writing comics in the 90s in college that I was super into. So it's weird for me to be Facebook friends with this guy.
Yeah.
But I knew him through comic reviewing and stuff. And he posted a thing about the Chimichanga, like the story of how that came about. And I asked if it was okay to repost. He said, sure. So I reposted it on my Facebook page, and I'm going to recount it here.
Yep.
So apparently there's an old Saturday Night Live sketch, which I don't know if you've seen. Have you seen this sketch?
I think I have, actually.
I have.
A sketch with Jimmy Smits.
Jimmy
right?
Smits is in it. And basically the gag is it's all these white newscasters. Jimmy Smits is the new guy. And they're overpronouncing everything with a Spanish name.
Yes.
To such a degree that sometimes you can't even understand what they're saying.
Right.
And so Fabian Nicieza and one of my patron saints of comics, Mark Gruenwald, were around the Marvel bullpen the day after that, and they were overpronouncing every Mexican word they knew, like chimichanga, and some of that stuff. And so when Fabian was looking for Deadpool to like a weird-sounding food, a ridiculous-sounding food, in Deadpool Cable, that's where chimichanga came from.
It was a callback to that.
It's a callback to a 90s Saturday Night Live reference, which I thought was just kind of funny.
The trickle-down in joke.
I just like that Mark Gruenwald was in any way involved.
That's kind of cool.
All right, so leaving Deadpool for the moment. There were some other trailers, notably the what they call the final trailer, which I don't know if that means it's the final trailer.
The final long trailer. They'll have a few like spot TV spots.
Sure. The final big trailer
for Batman versus Superman.
Yep.
Or is it Superman versus Batman?
I think it's Superman versus Batman.
Okay,
sure.
Because it's supposed to, it should have been his movie. Yeah, I don't know if that.
Well, increasingly, it seems to be Ben Affleck's movie, and the trailer sure makes it look that way. Because the big thing about this trailer was that fight.
Right. It opens with Batman taking down some criminals, and I have to say, I feel like in some ways it's the first time I've ever seen Batman being as Batman as I wanted him to be.
It immensely reminded me of the fight sequences Arkham Knight Asylum.
I saw somebody do a side-by-side video of that fight with Arkham Knight footage, and it's very close.
Yeah. But that said, it's funny because, you know, there's some similarity for sure. But it's Arkham Knight got it right, or the Arkham game.
Yeah.
And the movie's getting it right. I can't really, like, make fun of the movie for it.
I'm
I just
imagine,
all it means is that they're doing it right.
I just imagine Zack Snyder was like, let's do it exactly like that.
Yeah. Which is good.
Square, triangle, square, square, square. Because, you know, Batman is like, he puts, like, some dude's face through the floor.
Yeah.
He's moving super fast. Yeah. That was one of the other things, is he's, like, moving around. And it's also very clear action. It's not that
which is better than what Snyder usually does.
Not Snyder. No, Snyder does pretty clear action. It's the who's the guy who Nolan. Nolan's Batman was all wisps and shadows and ninja movements and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And his fight choreography was not great. I didn't think.
Yeah. Snyder. I will say. Yeah. Snyder's one of his strengths is in action.
Right. Like, you know, 300 is sort of known for its action choreography. Possibly even its fetishized slow motion action choreography, but.
Well, and Dawn of the Dead that we all still like.
Yeah.
And even Watchmen.
Watchmen had some pretty notable fight scenes and stuff like that. He always kind of amps that up. But I liked the speed of it. And in fact, I guess it's notable that this was not slow motion. Actually,
yeah, that's
honestly,
true.
That it was like, and I've always felt like, you know, if you ever look at old John Woo movies, like The Killer and Hard Boiled from the early 90s or late 80s, actually. What was remarkable about those is that they seem that the action scenes have little bursts of slow motion, but mostly they're this crazy real time stuff.
Yeah.
As soon as he gets over to America, it's all face off slow mo.
Yeah, it's true.
And it was never as good.
It's true. That said, this didn't make me want to see the movie anymore.
No, Nick.
I mean, I planned on seeing it anyway. So,
but did you think there was a decent trailer?
I mean, it was okay.
That was pretty decent.
I think Lex Luthor is
the biggest turnoff.
I hate their Lex Luthor. I hate
I hate their Lex Luthor, and I think they're trying to jam way too much into this.
That's true,
probably
too.
So, but I don't mind a little bit of ambition there, because I do think we have somewhat better control than we did in the 90s, where every superhero fought like four villains.
Now, you guys know how they Zapruder film every trailer now, right?
Yeah.
Did you see the Batman on Apocalypse still?
Yeah.
What?
It's, Batman is standing on what is clearly Apocalypse. There's a big Omega symbol carved into the ground.
Darkseid is supposed to be in
Darkseid is
what?
In Yeah.
Oh, is he going to, like, loose Doomsday or something like that?
I think so.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Crap. Well, I was going to say something, but I forgot
it's
what it
was. It's also going to have Aquaman. It's going to have Flash.
Yep,
right. We know they're going to be, like, little quick glimpses and stuff. Only Wonder Woman is probably going to have a serious role.
Although there are rumors, and who knows how serious these rumors are, that Warner Brothers is not happy with the reaction to this inside, and that the Batflex seems to be the most successful part of it, and that they may be refocusing, like, Justice League might get scrapped, and instead they're going to do a Batman movie with Batman
and the Justice League?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've seen that article float around in several different places, and in different ways, too, because it's not all the same, but it definitely, it seems like insiders are not pleased with what Snyder created.
You imagine they think they're still going and cutting and trying to make a different movie?
God, I hope not, because it premieres in like a month.
Yeah.
You know, but by the way, you know, Luthor played by, who's that?
Jesse Eisenberg.
You know who he reminds me of? Who's the big pharma bro guy?
Oh my God, Martin Shkreli?
Yeah. Doesn't he have that same, just like, he just would twerp you want to strangle?
He does. Now, if Superman just punched him in the face over and over again at super speed, I might be okay with that.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Probably not.
At some point, I was talking to our friend Jarek, and he reminded me that I guess at least at some point Who's the guy who played Walter White?
That is Bryan Cranston.
I don't know if people were just fan casting him as Luther, but I'm like, can you imagine what he would have brought to the table?
Yes, I can.
No, it would still have been a Zack Snyder movie.
Sure, but it would have been better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, I'm not particularly moved by this one to want to see it, but I'm it put me more in the I'll watch that when it hits cable or something like that.
Cable, like Deadpool Cable?
Yes.
Deadpool Cable, Batman, Superman?
The old guy from
when you were
Avatar.
Saying that it reminded, or when I was saying, and you said it reminded of Arkham Origins, the fight scene, I imagine they could do a cut where Ryan Reynolds is actually just playing with the controller. It would be Batman doing all the moves.
They should definitely do this.
Other movie trailer, we saw the trailer for Purge Election, which is the third Purge movie.
Right. This is kind of a cult series that I think a lot of people haven't necessarily seen these.
Well, I wrote it off just based on like being torture porn, basically.
Right. The first one in particular.
And then I remember, did I cause the sensation of Purge?
I think you might have.
Because I watched the first one and I was actually really impressed with what I found.
Yep. And then you passed along to Dave.
And then the second one hit, and that one was really good.
I actually like the second one better than the first one.
And it introduced the character that's going to be reoccurring in this third one, played by... Frank Grillo. Yeah, who's Crossbones.
So for those who have not seen them... The trailers, you know, get the concept out pretty quickly. It's a near future where there's once a year to relieve the national tensions and all this. For like 12 hours, all crime is legal,
including murder. Like including they specifically murder. Say
yeah,
that
people
the...
are allowed to go out. You can try and kill your boss.
Yep,
I can definitely see doing that. By the way,
yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, but anything is out there. So people kind of get you either hole up in your house and there's kind of like security measures people take and stuff. Or you go out on the streets with guns and knives, and you try and get it out of your system.
The second one sort of alluded to sort of more of a 1%.
Well, even the first one did, I think,
because, a little bit, but it was more of a kind of government.
Well, the first one was almost a claustrophobic horror story about a rich guy who was like trapped in his house during the purge and how his security systems failed him. Basically.
Visually, on the trailers made it look like it was a home invasion movie.
Yeah.
And there is that aspect of it, but it's actually more of like a exploration of like a sci-fi concept, almost more like what they would do on like an old like Outer Limits, not quite Twilight Zone. There was no big twist, but an exploration of a sci-fi concept.
And then the second one, as Nick said, Dave compared it. I think it's Aliens to Alien. It's bigger. There's a group of people. They're all out in the street. It's more from the point of view of the poorer people who are sort of stuck in this. And it also starts to implicate the new founding fathers who are the ones who introduced. Like maybe there's some corruption there. Maybe it is the 1% working on.
They're essentially like this will decimate the poor and they'll just kill each other and we can sort of keep the power base.
Third one.
And Purge Election Year seems to be sort of really bringing that home. It's like it's a senator who survived a purge. She's like the only one of her family survived it. And now she's like running on a campaign of shutting it down because it's disproportionately affects the poor.
And the new founding fathers are not wild about it.
And so she needs a bodyguard who is Frank Grillo's character from the second purge.
Who is basically the Punisher.
Yeah, who's basically the Punisher.
Yeah.
It looks great.
It does.
And it looks like it's going more along the stuff that I liked in the second one, sort of exploring the societal aspect of this. I'm really excited about this.
I don't know if I'd quite say it looks great, but it looks good to me.
Yeah.
I like the concept. The first one I saw, I was like impressed at how much it has going on for a movie that's essentially a pretty raw suspense movie.
Yeah.
You know, there's mostly suspense. And with each one, I've been more and more into their kind of... I'm like, I like the guys who are making these movies. I feel like their heart's in the right place. Yeah. Their thinking is pretty sharp.
Yep.
Then their characters are usually pretty well-defined. Just in a raw suspense level, I'm usually interested to see what's going to happen to the various people who are thrown into this crazy blender.
Right.
It's an election year theme, and an actual election year is kind of fun.
Yeah.
You don't get a lot of election year thrillers.
It's true.
Unless it's Manchurian Candidate.
Well, isn't London Has Fallen or something coming out this year?
Yeah, right. They're all over the place.
Gerard Butler returns.
I'm not sure how serious how much the politics really enter into that. I believe it may have just be a location.
Is it going to be the same director? Because wasn't that like Antoine Fuqua who did the?
It might have been. I don't know. There were two of those movies at the same time. So
yeah, the other one was. This is the more serious one. The other one had Jimmy Fox.
There's a ridiculous one in the series.
I feel like this would have been the perfect year for Air Force 2.
Get off my tank.
Isn't Air Force 2 the Marine helicopter, though?
Yeah, it is.
Get off my helicopter.
You know, if worst fears come to worst and Trump gets elected, I'll be rooting for the terrorists.
Yeah, fair enough. all right, moving on to TV. We had the Daredevil Season 2 trailer, like a full-on trailer.
It's the first part of the...
Part 1, yeah. Part 2 is like next week.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting thing to do. I don't think I've seen that before. Kind of.
So that is premiering on Netflix on March 28th.
Same day as Superman Batman.
This was heavily Punisher skewed.
Yes.
I have to say, I'm nervous about a couple things about Daredevil Season 2.
Yeah.
One is Drew Goddard isn't in it. We know that. Drew Goddard's not involved.
Right.
Christos.
Drew Goddard?
Drew Goddard is the guy who did.
Producer?
He was the showrunner.
Showrunner.
The first half.
And then Stephen S. DeKnight took over. Yes. And Stephen S. DeKnight is running the whole thing, which that didn't worry me too much. But, you know, I hear that Ruth and Christos Gage mm-hmm. were not involved.
Not really.
That makes me a little nervous. And the Punisher is in throughout this trailer. He is not wearing a skull shirt.
It's true.
And I'm just saying we are at a point in history where give the heroes their costumes.
Yeah.
I don't need him to be a guy in a...
Daredevil didn't have his costume the entire first season.
I know, but Punisher's a guy who, without his costume, he's just a guy in a... He's just a guy with guns.
Right. It's also one of those that's pretty easy to do.
Yes.
You don't even have to, like, have him, like, you know, like, the full kind of, like, geared up with all the... Where the skull's teeth are, like, ammo clips and stuff like that. Have him basically look like a normal guy, but then, you know, like, you know, you see under his jacket, he's wearing the skull.
I'm fine with the Tom Jane painty-looking skull. Just give me the skull.
Yeah. It is a little weird. I don't know that that's my biggest fear about it. I actually found the trailer a little underwhelming.
I did, too.
And I don't take that too much to mean too much.
No.
I also was the guy who thought that the Alias Jessica Jones trailers were a little underwhelming.
Yeah.
And they still did a very good job with it. Nick, where are you at on it?
I wasn't blown away, but I thought the vibe of the Punisher that they've given was pretty much on the nose.
I feel like this was the serious trailer, and I bet the next one is going to be like the gunplay trailer.
Yeah, well, they had a line in there where they said he's taking out villains with military precision. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
that's a cool take on the Punisher.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like they're going to do him right.
Yeah.
I think John Bernthal is a really good casting.
Yeah.
They're poising the classic moral battle that they had in the comics, you know, which is, you know, Daredevil doesn't kill.
Yep.
Frank Castle, you're
one bad day away from becoming me was...
That's what makes me nervous.
Because
that line and some of the stuff we saw is from that Garth Ennis issue of Punisher. Where Ennis...
Oh, was that?
Where Ennis, like... Where the Punisher basically tapes up Daredevil and makes him watch as he kills somebody.
Right.
And basically punks out Daredevil.
Right.
I hate that story, and I'm afraid they're going to translate it to screen.
You know what? I remember that. He, basically, like, ties him up, puts a gun in his hand.
And he can,
so he's like, you can shoot me and kill me to stop me from killing some criminal.
Yeah.
But in the end, you know, it's like, are you willing to kill a fairly innocent guy, me, over a criminal?
And I hated that.
And you know,
I feel like they may be going that direction. I'm a little worried.
I think that was Ennis very specifically saying, you know, you little kids out there with your comic book morality, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And of course, that's Ennis trying to kind of like really throw in his real world themes.
Yep.
I think I would hope that people would realize that Daredevil is more of a fantasy and doesn't really, like, you know, it's edgier than Spider-Man, but it still falls under this belief that, you know, a guy could run around beating up people and it'd be okay.
Yeah.
And, like, it's crazy fantasy land, people. You don't necessarily need to worry if he doesn't kill.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
we'll see.
I have to say, overall, I was a little disappointed in the trailer.
Hmm.
And
I wasn't disappointed. I just wasn't as enthused as I thought I would be.
More like Crappisher.
I did. The tease at the very end of the trailer was interesting.
Oh, right. They do drop Elektra.
And she's British for some reason.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I suspect that was supposed to be a Greek accent, but...
She also could have been schooled in England. And,
yeah. That could be a number of reasons.
But, you know, honestly, Elektra and Punisher Season 2 Daredevil still makes this is perfect sense. I'm still curious to see what they do.
Yeah.
All right. There was also the trailer for Rhodey's, which is not the story of Rhodey Rhodes of Infinite Earths. Sorry, Dave.
But in fact, a new Showtime series about...
A new show about Rhodey's for a band.
Yep.
Cameron Crowe, who did the almost famous movie, which is very much about behind the scenes at
70s. He seems to know something about music, the world of music.
Well, it might be because he was a music journalist.
Correct. I was going to say, he wrote for quite a while.
Yep. Almost Famous is actually semi-autobiographical. So Cameron Crowe has had mostly terrible movies for the last few years.
Yeah, I was going to say, most of them, even though Aloha was... I had a fondness for it because I liked Bradley Cooper. I liked a lot of the people involved.
People seem to hate that
movie, I recognize that it was a bad movie.
Okay.
Was it a bad movie beyond even the weird casting of a white chick as a Hawaiian chick?
Yeah, I think it was
It had a lot of cliche.
And meanders, right?
It meandered a little bit. It wasn't as bad as Elizabethtown, which I felt was awful.
I have not seen a lot of Cameron Crowe movies, but I sort of feel that way about the ones that I have seen.
Say Anything, Almost Famous.
I haven't seen Say Anything. I've seen Almost Famous and something else of his.
Jerry Maguire?
No. Maybe it's just that I've seen enough bits and pieces of Jerry Maguire.
I've not seen Jerry Maguire.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've just never completely plugged into his vibe. I felt like he was kind of emotionally manipulative not in that Spielberg really obvious way, but in his own way.
You're not wrong. I mean, that's part of what he does. That said, this trailer has Carlo Gugino and Luke Wilson as sort of maybe the heads of the band, the managers.
Right.
And Luis Guzman is maybe a bus driver who imparts wisdom, it looks like.
Yeah. Looks like there's Ryan Gosling. There's a bunch of people involved.
I think there's a lot of people doing like cameos, playing themselves probably. But it's basically behind the scenes of a big touring band.
Yep.
I thought it was a good trailer.
It's a very good trailer. It's tailor-made for a sort of classic Cameron Crowe, I think. Yeah.
Also, it's something that honestly I can't recall anybody particularly shining a spotlight on.
Well, HBO's doing it right now with Vinyl.
Yeah.
Is that also about roadies?
No, not roadies, but it's 70s music.
Okay. But this is a pretty specific thing. This is a pretty specific group of people that are usually...
It's not 70s.
They get a sort of a joke in the movie. Yeah. They're, you know, like sort of the potheads toting stuff around.
Right.
Or they're just there in the background.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see an actual spotlight shown on them.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good trailer, even though I'm not a big Cameron Crowe guy.
Well, Showtime has been on right now. I'm watching Billions and really enjoying it. So I have hopes for this one. And then one bit of TV news. Fox is going forward with its Lethal Weapon pilot, and they have cast their Murtaugh.
Who is it? Go ahead.
Damon Wayans Sr.
My first reaction is, that's ridiculous.
Yep.
And then I was like, what was the movie that we were talking about?
Damon Wayans Sr., that's Damon Wayans, I think the one we're thinking from Requiem for a Dream is Jr.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it's because I was going to say...
Damon Wayans Sr. did Last Boy Scout.
Yeah, Last Boy Scout and things like that. So he's got that sort of... I can see him as a Murtaugh.
Well, yeah, I can too.
Murtaugh is so like kind of grounded, and I always think of him as the over-the-top guy. But I haven't seen him in a ton that was not like Living Color and The Last Boy Scout.
I think Damon Wayans Sr. can do more restrained. He'd be Murtaugh.
He's got to be at least in the right age group, right? Yeah. Like in his 40s or something now?
He's older than that.
Yeah, he's older than that.
Yeah, he's in like his 50s or
60s. He's 55 or 56 according to the page Nick just...
Well, he has a son who's old enough to be acting in New Girl, so...
Okay. We don't know who's going to be playing Mel Gibson's spot.
Do not, yeah. Okay. But... I gotta say, Fox doing a Lethal Weapon show, like, Lethal Weapon feels like a show that could work.
I could see it. I mean, that was like, it's as quintessentially a cop pairing as there's ever been.
Yeah.
I
mean, we've seen lots of buddy cop shows at this point. Yep. But I would watch a Lethal Weapon show if it's good. And I think Damon Wayans is good casting.
I am not a fan of anything other than Lethal Weapon 1.
Sure.
But I've seen bits and pieces of all the other movies, and I always like the repartee between Riggs and Murtaugh.
Yeah.
So, I could see it conceivably. It's possible.
All right. That hits our TV news, our movie news. And now we got a potpourri of different topics.
Okay.
So first I'm going to go with our Kickstarter news.
Yep.
Tim Doyle, friend of the store, we sell his prints.
Yes.
Has a Kickstarter going right now for Unreal Estate, the book.
Yep.
You may have seen Unreal Estate. It's basically sort of posits various pop culture locations as if they were abandoned or not in their usual time, like Dark of Night and that kind of thing. And everything from Springfield to Lost to
Firefly.
I'm just going to zero in on the Springfield one for just a second in case This is a really beautiful, beautifully painted, like, sort of cityscape. It's like the whole valley of Springfield drawn in there. And yet it has a certain kind of gritty realism to it.
Yeah.
And it's like Bart is seen from behind, more or less drawn realistically. Yeah. But you can
like tagging the backside of
The big Springfield sign, the big Hollywood sign.
Yep.
But it's one of those, you look at it and you don't go like, oh, it's The Simpsons, until you start watching for a minute and then you start recognizing a few of the places. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then you start recognizing a lot of the places.
Yep.
But he walks this awesome kind of borderland between kind of like a, a slightly edgier version of it, or a more realistic version, yeah. And, you know, these fantastical fiction locations.
Amazing color work on them, too.
Yes.
And he's done it. I mean, there's Twin Peaks is in there. I know that Sopranos.
And you mentioned the Serenity one.
Yeah. And so, basically, he's got a big book on Kickstarter that collects all these prints, as well as some new stuff. I know that he just added as a stretch goal. Because it made its money in like the first 12 hours.
Yeah.
Like it's going to happen.
Right.
Just
a question of whether people get in on.
One of the stretch goals is the thank you for being a friend print, which is the Golden Girls house.
That's hilarious.
So go check that out. I'll put a link in our show notes. I am certainly going to pledge to pick up this book. I'm looking forward to it. All right. Moving on to our staple of music video news.
Sure. Do we have music video news?
We do now.
Okay
Go has another video.
All right, Okay Go, who, let's see, I'm trying to think. Their previous notable ones, they had the treadmill thing.
They've had the treadmill.
They only do the fun videos.
They've had the Rube Goldberg machine type thing.
Right,
they did the one on the sort of Segway scooters.
Yep.
They always do interesting stuff.
Kind of like, it's like nerdy synchronized dancing.
And I like their music. I've always liked their music.
Right, good pop indie band.
So their new song is Upside Down and Inside Out, and the trailer is them on one of these Vomit Comet ships.
Not the trailer, but the actual video.
The video.
Yeah.
The video is actually them on one of these planes that gives you zero G.
Yeah. Right.
And it's,
those still weird me out to how they even work. They like dive bomb the Earth.
Yeah.
And like exactly match the rate at which you would be falling or whatever.
Yep.
So it's zero G inside the plane for a few minutes.
I think it's a couple minutes. Yeah. And then it takes them like 10 minutes to set it back up.
Yeah.
And apparently they puked numerous times while making this.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it looks like it's one shot. I don't quite know how they did it. It's amazing.
There must be times when something goes in front of the camera. Yep. Or they must have done it.
But they're dancing around in zero G, and there's props. There's a couple stewardesses who are actresses who are like gymnasts.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of cool choreography.
They are like launching down. I don't even know. Like, I mean, these guys, they're nerdy dudes who kind of do fun synchronized stuff. They're not dancers.
No.
They're not amazing athletes or anything like that. But they are launching around this plane in sort of these synchronized ways that I'm like, you know, I would guess it was done with CG and effects, but the fact that we know that it wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really fantastic, and I watched it thinking, how the hell did they do this?
Yeah, throughout and they do a bunch of fun tricks to kind of play with the zero G.
Yeah.
Are those like not like balloons or balls or something?
Yeah, there's balls. There's paint.
Yep. It is as entertaining a video as they've ever made.
Yep, definitely worth watching. We'll put the link for that in our show notes as well. Comic news: Afterlife with Archie and Sabrina will return this summer.
Yes. Long delayed.
Long delayed.
Obnoxiously long delayed, but it's two series that I loved.
Now, the writer, Roberto Aguirre-Sagasa, is the like CEO of Archie at this point, or at least head of publishing. He did a sort of mea culpa, and he's like, yeah, this is me. It took me longer to get the Riverdale pilot for CW or Fox or whatever it is up and running.
CW.
And he said, the thing that makes me nervous is, he said, there will be new issues this summer. So there will be a new issue of Archie, or Afterlife with Archie. There will be a new issue of Sabrina. They showed some art. The art is beautiful.
Right.
And he said, hopefully we can stay on schedule after this. That is not the promising confirmation that I would like.
If you put out an article, you'd be like, we've got the next five issues done. We'll be on time.
I have this feeling we're going to get one issue, and then it'll be six more months.
Yeah.
But
maybe
if that means we eventually get trades, that's good. It just means they're not dead, which I thought might be the case.
I would like, I don't know how long Sabrina was planned to go, but I would like to get, you know, if ultimately there were like a nice 12 issues or something out of it, and two good trades for Afterlife with Archie, I'd certainly like more.
Yeah.
But if they got up to like basically 12 issues of each, I'd be solidly happy with that.
Yeah.
What, on issue 7 of Afterlife with Archie?
It's issue 8 or 9, I think, because they've gotten a couple issues into the new story.
Sabrina, they only got like 2, right?
3. I think there were 3.
Yeah, that's
so. Right. Hopefully, they'll reprint all the other ones because we're long out of those.
Yep. Yeah. But do they have the graphic novel?
The graphic novel of Afterlife with Archie is available. Yeah.
And everybody should read that because
it's great. Yeah. All right, game news. The Austin-based Fireside Games, who have done Castle Panic, Bears, Bloodsuckers, and another one they just recently did. Dead Panic.
Yes, hugely successful.
Big successful. They're doing another in their Panic line of game called Star Trek Panic.
Now, this is They actually got the actual Star Trek license?
Yep.
This is pretty awesome for, like, our local boys made good.
Indeed. And this, I assume it'll be kind of like Deadpan or Castle Panic, where it's like you're cooperating to try and keep the Enterprise from being overrun or something like
right.
that.
Right. If I'm guessing as to, like, the way those work, you know, you essentially, in those games, in Castle Panic, you had literally like a dozen or so castle walls that you build up in the center, and these orcs and goblins and stuff that get closer on each turn, and you all work together to try and stop them.
Yeah.
And they knock over the walls, and you try and rebuild them so that by the end of the game, at least one wall is standing.
Yep.
And they did the same thing with a cabin and stuff, like for a zombie game.
Right.
So have, like, deflector shields.
Yeah, to have the Enterprise and like approaching Klingon ships and Romulan ships. I'm guessing something like that.
Yeah, I think so too.
But these have always been great multi. I mean, not multi, but great co-op games, but also especially great for people who are first interested in that genre.
Yeah.
Like, I love Pandemic, but it might be like, especially if you've got kids or something, I always felt like Castle Panic or even Dead Panic, if they like the zombies, would be a good intro to the concept. As a Trekkie, I'm of course interested.
I'm curious as well, and that is coming out in May. So that's interesting. Finally, we turn to Nick, our Toy Fair 2016 correspondent, for the rundown of Toy Fair.
Senior Toy Fair correspondent.
Senior Toy Fair correspondent, Nick.
I am Senior Nick.
Senior Nick.
No, as always, New York Toy Fair is the sort of biggest toy fair of all year. I know some people looked at San Diego Comic-Con, and there are some announcements there, but tons of companies go out to New York, and the announcements this year are pretty great. If you're a Star Wars fan, they are definitely going to continue the Star Wars Black series, both the 3.75-inch and the 6-inch. 6-inch is an interesting lineup. They're going to continue their Rebels figures.
I saw that.
And the big one that they're going to do is Sabine.
Yeah, they're answering the criticisms people had about them not having female action figures.
Yes. Well, and then not only Sabine, but also they're doing Princess Leia from New Hope.
Yeah.
Which I saw a few people griping about because they're using soft goods. People have really rough time.
What?
They call, like, cloth, like, soft goods for, like, a dress and everything.
And they would sometimes rather have, like, a sculpted rubber or something instead.
Yeah.
I didn't know that there were schisms among the action figure community.
Oh, very much so.
I suspected.
They're also doing...
I guess I just didn't know what they were.
They're doing C-3PO from Force Awakens with his new red arm.
Okay.
They're doing...
you know what I heard that was interesting? Are they making Darth Revan or whatever?
Yes, Darth Revan.
Oh, expanded. Revan. Interesting.
Yeah. Yep.
From, was it Knights of the Old Republic, right?
Yeah.
Knights of the Old Republic. And then they're doing from classic... they're doing AT-AT Driver, which people... you know, kind of guess, are we going to get an AT-AT in that scale?
Oh, my God.
And that the answer to that is no. That would be like $400, $500.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And I don't know the sales of the TIE Fighter were all that great.
Yeah. So,
from Batman Animated Series, you'd think the sales of the Batmobile were astronomical because we're now getting a Batwing.
Yeah, which looks fantastic.
Which is huge.
And it's the same price as the Batmobile.
Same price at the moment. I don't know if that's going to stick.
Yeah.
I imagine it'll go up to 150.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Right now they're saying $100. But yeah, the Batman Animated Series is going hugely well. Right. It's not only doing more of the characters, but it's also schisming off into Batman Beyond territory.
They're doing some packs.
Yeah, they're doing some packs.
The Batman Beyond 3-pack has Batman Beyond, Old Man Bruce Wayne, and Ace the Bat Hound. I will definitely be buying that.
Yeah, I'll probably break down and buy that. They're doing a 5-pack Girls Night Out,
yep.
Which is... the two that people will probably really want are Livewire and Supergirl.
Yeah, the tease of the Supergirl, Superman line.
But they're also including... Batgirl, Poison Ivy,
and a new Harley Quinn.
And a new Harley Quinn.
The Harley Quinn is from the, and they're making her as a separate figure as well. She's from the new Batman Adventures.
Yes.
But I don't think they changed Harley Quinn that much.
No, they didn't. They are going to do the new Batman Adventures Joker, and I've forgotten how different he was.
Oh, yeah,
from
very
the,
different.
From
they
the
made
classic.
Him more shark like.
Yeah.
You know, y'all have not mentioned the greatest character to be created in this line, Harvey Bullock.
Harvey Bullock is getting a figure. He comes with a half-eaten donut.
Oh, my God.
And a shotgun.
Yep.
And it looks great. I'm super, super excited they're doing that because it probably means Montoya at some point.
I'm also super excited for the Clayface.
The Clayface looks fantastic. Because
he's oversized. He comes with multiple arms.
Multiple heads.
And multiple heads.
Yeah.
I really wanted him so you could shove a Batman into his stomach and
yeah.
something out of it, because that was always creepy to me.
But they did get all the arms and different weapons
yes.
and stuff.
So it definitely feels like the original Clayface.
They've done a Gordon, or they're doing a
Gordon? They're doing a Gordon.
So ultimately, you could put together a Gotham PD force if they do a good Montoya one at some point. So you get Bullock, Montoya, and Gordon.
Yep.
Well, and I heard rumors that they were going to continue on the animated line to do, you know, Superman and Justice League. And I think these box sets, Beyond and this Girls Night Out, they're testing it out.
Yep.
So we might, if this continues to do well for DC Direct, and I foresee it doing, we might get Justice League Unlimited figures. We might get Superman Adventures.
At that point, as I've seen several friends say, noted, say goodbye to your money.
You might
as well take out a loan.
And on the Marvel front, and this is there are multiple toys. Go look at Toy Arc. Go look at a bunch of other things. But Marvel kind of outdid themselves with their Legends line this year. A lot of people were griping that there haven't been new figures. Where are my X-Men toys?
Right.
They basically said, "Oh, you want X-Men toys? We'll make them."
Oh, so really?
They're doing an entire line dedicated to X-Men.
Interesting. I thought Perlmutter might have put the stomp on that.
It's going to have Rogue, Iceman, Cable, Deadpool.
The 90s Rogue?
It is. It's generally designed.
Okay.
There is going to be Jean Grey. I'm missing one other person. I forget. But they're doing Wolf a whole Spain. Line. Havoc from his new Uncanny Avengers look.
Oh, nice.
So it's the John Cassaday redesign. But it's a pretty classic
Havoc.
Yeah. But I wish it had the giant
his crazy head things. Discs and not his like little painted on discs.
Yes, but still, it's really cool.
Yeah,
but also we saw scatter shots of the new Spider-Man wave and the new Avengers wave, and they're doing like Miles Morales. They're doing which is a completely new figure Buck, which is a sort of a young male, which they haven't done before.
Captain Marvel with the head helmet, isn't that?
She's been around.
Oh, she's been around. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Miles Morales, Ultimate Spider-Man, they're doing, Silk is going to be made. Yeah.
It seemed like they were getting in some of their expanded universe.
I was kind of shocked.
A lot of the ones people have been clamoring for.
Yeah. I was kind of shocked they didn't do a Ms. Marvel. But that wasn't.
Didn't they already announce Ms. Marvel?
They teased a smaller universe scale.
They should do one that comes with Lockjaw.
That's what they teased as a 3.75. What they're doing is Hasbro is labeling their entire line Legends, which is kind of confusing.
Yeah.
But it's sort of brand now, so they're going to have the 6-inch figures, the 3.75 figures, and they've actually announced a new line of sort 10 of...
10-foot figures.
Well, 12-inch figures.
Okay. Wow.
They announced Spider-Man, Iron Man, and Captain America as 12-inch.
Sort of their big icons.
Bunch of, accessories, helmets, other heads.
Skateboards.
Skateboards. And they've also announced a prop line.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, they're doing full-scale reproductions of Captain America's shield and Iron Man's helmets.
Oh, right. These are like literally for people to use for cosplay type stuff.
Yeah, a cosplay, they could look on a wall.
For a minute I was saying it was like gear for the figures to use.
No. This is definitely sort of that. And they look good. $100 price tag is a bit steep at times, but
I don't know. I saw somebody showing off a cap shield at Dallas Comic Con that was $500.
So, yes, that's compared to that.
So.
And a quick shout out to Babs Tarr, because I saw her posting on all of her Twitters that multiple Batgirls are being made.
Lots of Batgirl figures.
And Batgirl of Burnside has definitely made a hit this toy season.
Yeah.
She's got a motorcycle and stuff.
Well, not only from the Icons line, they're doing a Femme Fatale sort of bust that they did of her. I think they're doing another figure as well. So I think she's got three iterations.
Yeah, plus she's got some pops, some of the Q pops, all that stuff. Yeah,
the DC Icons line looks great. Yeah. So, it's a banner year for toys, and it also is a reminder that, ouch, my wallet.
All right, so that is a pretty packed news segment we got in there. And we're going to take a break, and then we will come back with some TV, movie, and game news. All right, so since we don't have comics this week, we're going to talk about TV, a lot of TV stuff we've been catching up on, and Nick's spoiler review of Deadpool, because I know some people are going to be interested, and a game that Dave has played.
Yes.
So let's start off. We'll do Deadpool last, so we can give a big spoiler warning. Let's start off talking about TV, and I'll real quick talk about a couple things that I've watched, which Dave has seen one of them.
Yeah.
So I'm going to quick hit the one that I've seen, which is Full Frontal with Samantha Bee.
Yep.
Now, you've seen some clips of this, right?
Right. And I know Samantha Bee, of course, from The Daily Show, yep. where she was a longtime correspondent and was, like, one of the awesomest people ever.
Yep.
Super funny.
She has a new show on TBS, which TBS also did Angie Tribeca, which I loved.
Uh-huh.
So they may be starting to develop both of the more female-led comedies.
Yep.
And funny comedies, because the Full Frontal with Samantha Bee is a half-hour show. It's a weekly show. It's on Mondays. And it seems to be sort of a Daily Show riff a little bit, John Oliver style.
I was wondering. I assumed it was like mostly riffs on news, current events stuff.
Well, it's probably like – it's a little bit like John Oliver in that there's one person. There's no correspondence. It's all her.
Okay.
And she sort of stands up and has a screen and does little bits and stuff. And I've only seen the first episode, but the first episode was really funny.
She has a particular – and I've seen a few clips from it, and it was great.
Yeah.
She has a certain style of acerbic wit combined with like this incredulous, like, did you really just say that
thing?
But she also like really stays in character when she's interviewing people and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it always just cracks me the hell up.
Yeah. I really liked this. I thought she did some funny stuff on the Hillary Bernie front, on the Republican debates.
Right. This is as timely as it can get, basically. Yeah.
With Trevor Noah's Daily Show being sort of a different beast, I'm kind of glad that there's more voices out there from the former Daily Show.
Yeah, yeah.
And this I thought was really, really good. It's not up where John Oliver is yet, but it's probably close to where he started, where it's like she's a little nervous still finding her feet, but there's some funny stuff in there.
Good.
You mentioning John Oliver just makes people should go watch it.
John Oliver's back.
And dear God, wasn't it great?
Yeah, his runner was on voting, and he also did get in just in time to talk about the death of Antonin Scalia, which is everything you expect it to be.
Yes.
Cool. I will check this out.
And then there's Hulu's new show. Hulu is starting to get some original content. The new show is 11/22/63.
Yep.
It's shepherded by J.J. Abrams, although he's not directing or anything.
Right.
And it is based on a Stephen King novel.
Right. Broadly speaking, about time travel and an attempt to save JFK from being assassinated.
Yes.
Pretty notable cast.
Yeah, James Franco is the lead.
And a notable supporting role.
Chris Cooper is in there. Yep.
Yeah.
And there's others. I was looking at the cast list, and it's got some pretty good people who haven't necessarily shown up yet.
Yeah. But this is a pretty A-listy start for Hulu.
And the high concept is very Stephen King. It's in Maine, of course.
Yeah.
And basically this guy's a high school teacher who discovers that the owner of his favorite diner has a closet that leads to 1960.
Yes. It's interestingly, we've seen a lot of time travel stories.
Yeah, yeah.
What I thought was interesting about this is that it has that sort of mysterious quality of King stuff so that it like there's raw it clearly works and the guy even kind of knows some rules to it. But he kind of doesn't know why it works the way it does.
Yeah.
Like, one thing that sort of didn't quite come up in the discussion that Franco has when he's like, you got to be effing kidding me about this, is like, you know, why would it go back then? Why this time? And apparently, among other strange rules, when you come back, 2 minutes have passed in the present day.
Yeah.
And you could go there for years and 2 minutes would have only passed in the present day. And if you step back into it, it resets.
Yeah.
Which is actually kind of a scary thought. I hadn't thought about this. It was like, obviously, the clear ultimate overriding goal is to save JFK. There's clearly going to be some side stuff going on.
Sure.
But, like, if you accomplished it...
You have to stay, right?
I mean, I guess you would have to stay, but also, like, does the portal disappear, or could it potentially be corrupted by the next somebody else
who knows?
Through? Yeah. But those rules make for some really interesting twists and turns.
Well, the thing I find the most fascinating is time doesn't want to be changed.
Yes, this was something I had. Well, I've seen versions of this before, but it's creepy when.
But King like, time does is
it.
Trying to kill him.
Yes. there's a scene where he's like at a convention where Senator Kennedy is going to talk, and he is trying to watch somebody else who's close to him and see if this guy might be like a handler for Lee Harvey Oswald or something,
right?
Like that.
Or a secret Russian agent or whatever.
But he's gotten in sort of on false credentials, and they chase him, and he kind of runs through this maintenance area and he hides in a room.
Yeah.
And because he was getting close to something that he knew is kind of like some crucial event, the guy who Chris Cooper had even said this is a crucial event, and when he tried to do it, there was something that he got, like, injured.
Yeah.
But he's in this room, and, like, all these roaches start pouring out of the walls, and, like, they're, like, coming at him.
Yeah.
And they're like hundreds of them are, like, crawling up on him, and he has to, like, run out in the hall, and he gets busted.
Yeah.
And what happens is really interesting after that, because it is – you realize how kind of – what a precarious position he's in.
Yep.
Should we say how he's going to try to survive?
Well, they also do. I think they do some interesting stuff with the when he goes back. I was a little worried that Stephen King was doing the rosy tinted glasses of the past. Like, look how great. And so they play a lot with how cheap everything is, how the food is better, all this kind of stuff. But then they do address sort of the racism of the era and that kind of thing.
Right. He's walking to go to the bathroom, and this black guy is like, I think you're headed the wrong way, buddy. And he looks and he sees the signs like, this is for colors, and the whites go over here. Yeah. And he's just like, that's just what everybody is doing.
Yeah. But I do love that he's like, he buys a car and he gets a place to stay and everything is super cheap.
Yep.
And of course, he uses his time travel to make money.
Does it have a lot of humor in it? Or
There's some humor in there.
There's some humor in there, yeah.
They also, part of it is just in how they direct it. And one of it is in using I don't remember if this showed up in the book or not, but a ridiculous sort of like internet meme on his, that somebody shows him on his phone early on.
Yeah.
But that actually has an interesting payoff later.
Yeah.
So there is humor in it.
I was going to say, Franco sort of, evokes a little bit of
humor. He's actually playing it straighter than I've seen him play.
He's pretty straightforward, yeah. Well, what's interesting is, like, he knows he's going to have to survive, and the weird thing is, he needs to essentially wait out the assassination, so he's got, like, 3 years that he has to spend in there, in that time period.
Yeah.
You can't forward the timeline, you just got to go in and you got to sit it out. And in that time, the guy's given him this sort of notebook that's almost like Indiana Jones' dad's trail diary.
Yeah.
It's all his notes, all his things on who might or might not have been behind the assassination, because he doesn't know. But he's picked up some new information, and he has some leads from when he's tried to go back. The reason Chris Cooper didn't do it is because he was dying of cancer, and so he needs to hand it off to somebody before he goes, basically.
Mm-hmm.
One thing he gives him is a list of like a bunch of sports stats, so he knows who won in fights. He can place some bets,
and some cash.
Almost immediately it gets more complicated than he thought.
That's because he's stupid about it.
He's stupid about it. He finds out about where there's some backroom betting going on, and doesn't really think about the fact that these guys might be some rough customers.
Yeah.
So when he puts down money that to him doesn't seem like much, he's like, "How about $100 on this long shot?" They're like, $100. They like kind of can't believe it. And you can tell he doesn't know if he's gone too high or too low. He just hasn't figured out the economics of the 60s yet.
Yeah.
And of course it pays off, and he's like in pretty serious trouble, actually.
Yeah.
And because he's kind of on his own, like, in a way, the farther he gets from that portal that he first came through, which he could go back through and sort of reset everything. And that thought occurred to me several times during this. But I'm like, if you do that, then essentially all the time you've spent setting things up is all lost.
Right.
It's like seeing Groundhog Day from a sort of more realistic perspective where you're like, you would see all the legwork done.
Yeah.
I was like, I felt the suspense was pretty strong in it.
I'm pretty interested in it. And it's an 8-episode series.
Mm-hmm.
I like a good contained series. So I'm curious to see where it goes. I thought it was a good first episode.
Yeah, I feel like it's, at first it felt almost a little Back to the Future-y when he goes back.
Yeah.
But then there's that Stephen King edge that starts coming in.
Yeah.
And the consequences start sort of escalating. And also the mysteries are interesting. You don't know, is he going to try and sort of build a life for himself? Is he going to find a girl? We don't know.
Right.
But he's kind of – those things are on the periphery, and I'm interested.
Yeah. Now we're going to talk about a show that we've all been enjoying and we're all caught up on.
Yes.
Although as of tonight, we won't be, because there's a new episode coming. But that is The Flash. And first I want to mention, I think we put this on our news a couple weeks ago and never got around to talking about it, but did we ever talk about The Flash Supergirl crossover being confirmed?
No.
I guess not.
I don't think we did. But Flash and Supergirl are crossing over. It's the week of Daredevil being released, I think, when that episode. It's that Supergirl. Grant Gustin is going to guest star. Apparently Silver Banshee is going to be the bad guy.
Ah, that's fun.
And it looks like The Flash is going to wind up on Supergirl's Earth.
Yes.
The most interesting thing about this...
I did not think this was going to happen, by the way.
Well,
it to, but I didn't think it would.
Do you know why you didn't think it was going to happen?
Why didn't I think it was going to
happen? Because Greg Berlanti's been lying his ass off.
Was he doing the...
Every time someone asks about it, he's like, well, I don't know. All these ducks have to line up. We've talked about it in the writer's room, but I don't know how likely it is. He was full of shit, because it's going to be on in about 3 weeks. They were filming it every time they were asking about this, and he's been deflecting.
Do you think there's any possibility that, it was all sort of like... aside from the fact that it's fun to have it... you don't want it to leak out. You want to make a presentation of it.
Yeah.
But also, like, do you think there was, like, this could still fall through somehow?
Maybe, but I have to think they hadn't been filming it at this point.
I mean, honestly, if I was in that spot, I'd lie, too.
Because I'm all about the lying. Yeah.
Because, you know, when they presented it, the internet was, like, super excited for it, as they rightly should be. Because these are two shows that are very in sync as far as tone. They're both, like, tons of fun.
Yep.
And it's, like, one of those things you're like, I would love for this to happen. And the mere fact that it seems like such an obvious thing is probably what's going to prevent it from happening. It's like, it just seems like you don't get those sort of wish fulfillment things. And then suddenly, we did.
Yeah, increasingly we do. It's kind of nice.
Yep.
I think do that what would have been even better... Yeah. Is if they had not, if they managed to keep a lid on it until the episode came on.
Oh, man. So should we go ahead and say what happens?
What happens?
I mean.
Oh, you mean what's going to cause that?
No, how they have hinted at it.
Oh. Well, yeah, let's talk about The Flash.
Yeah.
So
this is going to be a little spoilery, people.
Oh, yeah, we were going to talk, there will be some spoilers for Flash if you're not caught up. But
so the one previous to this episode.
Well, when did we talk this about? We talked about when King Shark showed up, right?
Like, yeah, last time that was a while back.
So we haven't talked about Patty Spivot.
Yep.
And sort of where that went. We definitely want to talk about Earth 2 and Zoom as we found out more about it. So let's go in order. Let's talk about Patty Spivot.
Likeable character, weird send-off seemingly, but otherwise I was really liking her, and I hope it wasn't just because like the actress wanted to leave the show. I hope they still intend to bring her back in some way.
I get the sense the actress must have wanted out, because there's no way that was where they were going to go with that story.
I wish it wasn't the case, but I do think that's what happened.
Because they were also doing the same thing they did with Iris, where I was getting really annoyed with them just not telling her.
Right.
And
she does finally get to learn that
I liked where they left it with her. But I like that she figured it out, that Barry was lying to her, and then she sort of went around that, and I thought that was really good. But,
She
understood why.
Why? Okay, yeah.
But she also understood, like, that's why she called him from the train, and he shows up, and there was that moment between them where they didn't actually say, like, I know it's you, but they both knew
it
what
was
she
clear.
Meant.
Yeah.
And sort of what she got was, you couldn't tell me because you didn't know if you could trust me with that or if it wasn't important enough, but I know you'll always be there for me if I need you.
Right.
And that was a good thing. I really thought the chemistry between those two was really good, so I was kind of bummed to see that go away.
I sometimes wonder if writers just, they're like, if they do like two or three episodes where the characters are kind of enjoying each other, and then they're like, this ain't wrong, we gotta monkey wrench something.
Yeah.
Which is annoying to them so much.
It bugs me, but it doesn't bug me too much.
I
would rather, if they feel the relationship is just kind of boring in the sense that there's no sparks, let it be a very side sort of plot where he like talks about having been out with her, but we don't see her a ton in the episode.
Yeah.
You don't have to like have her killed or...
But she was taking on metahumans, she was involved with Joe, she was involved with him.
What was the episode where... Oh, it was the one with the turtle.
They used the turtle.
An obscure-ass... Well, not actually, he's an old-school Flash villain, but kind of a lame one.
If you ask Flash fans, if you got 100 Flash fans in the room and said, who's your favorite villain? I don't think even one is going to say the turtle.
Nope. But they did a great job with him. We did talk about the turtle, I think, because we were talking about...
I don't think we did, not on the podcast.
Maybe not.
But it was Aaron Douglas from Battlestar Galactica.
They did an awesome job presenting... See, I thought I remember talking about his powers and how those, like, waves of slowness...
I think we talked about it, but I don't think we talked about it on the podcast. Maybe we did, I don't know.
But the thing with Patty is what made me think of it, because he, like, shows up at this, like, get-together that she's at.
Yep.
Barry has to do his awkward, I've got to go. And so he can go beat the Flash.
Yep.
And stuff like that. While that's happening, she just draws down on him.
Opens
fire. And but of course he uses his powers and everything goes all bullet time and cool.
But
great,
remember,
visualization of the powers.
She's the one who pulled a gun on King Shark. Like, Patty was not afraid of anyone.
Yep.
And I liked that.
Yep.
I'm just more annoyed with the really injuring Barry's love life to the point where he feels like he can't be with anybody.
I
don't like that in a show that is supposed to be very uplifting and sort of pro fun.
Sure, but it is still CW show, and
have to have the romance, will they, won't they thing. But it feels like it's just a little bit becoming too cliche.
I agree,
and I feel like the writers have shown that they have a way of writing clever.
Yeah,
and I feel like if any show could get away with him being in an actual relationship that would stick, they could show that. Because they're showing it in Arrow, and I feel like that relationship between Ollie and Felicity has reached that equilibrium where, she's got some issues, but they resolve them, and it feels like I want Barry in that same spot.
Speaking of Arrow, one of my just favorite gags, quick side gags on the recent issue or episode of Flash, Cisco does some cool hacking bit, and he's like, who's the best hacker in the world? And, like, simultaneously, Barry and Wells, I guess.
Barry and Caitlin are like, Felicity Smoke.
They just shut his ass down.
I loved that. I thought that was really funny.
And it's true, too.
Well, then the next episode was Reverse Flash again.
Before we get to that,
okay,
Wally West.
Yeah.
What do we think about Wally West?
Wally West is a sort of annoying subplot right now. I actually liked the character more when he first showed up and seemed more sympathetic. But then they've kind of been playing up his rebel angle. And he's been a little annoying. I mean, like, I feel like that I can almost see how they're setting up the powers in some ways. And I think that'll be good. They set up that he, like, does illegal street racing and stuff like that. And, you know, the one good thing that I think has come out of it is that Iris got to be kind of more headstrong in trying to protect him.
That's what I was going to say. I think that was the strongest that Wally's been, is when it got – that Joe was so nervous about throwing off the relationship that Iris got to sort of step in and play the big sister role.
Yeah, and I thought that was really good. Also, for Joe, that he would actually maybe – he's always been, you know, a guy who seemed like he could lay down the law when it needed to. That he would fall back and not do it because he's so worried about pushing his kid farther away.
It's also the best that Iris has been.
Yeah, agreed.
Right, so she got to be kind of like a badass with the dude who was like the guy who ran the races.
Yeah.
Was clearly a dangerous dude.
Yeah.
And also, I would say in the most recent episode, Iris got to be have a lot of fun.
Yes.
And the actress got to have some fun as in her Earth 2 incarnation.
Yeah.
Should we talk about Earth 2?
We'll get to Earth 2. Okay. But yes, I agree with you. So yes, let's talk about Zoom.
Reverse Flash, right?
You want Reverse Flash, yes.
Yeah.
Flash came back.
Yeah. It was the original incarnation of basically him coming there to sort of find out originated.
Yep. And there's a lot of time travel wonkiness, which I thought they generally did pretty well.
Yeah, I think they handled it really well.
And I'm sometimes lost on some of the Reverse Flash Zoomy stuff.
But I like the notion that basically this is a Reverse Flash from before he meets the Flash.
He takes the guise of Harrison Wells.
It's outside the whole time loop thing.
Yes.
Which I thought was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I like them having to make some hard choices with him. Yep. They're putting Cisco right into the vibe thing, which they were doing quite a bit.
They've had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah.
I've liked pretty much everything that they've done with Cisco and his vibe powers. Mm-hmm. They've very much tailored it to the actor and to the show's presentation of vibe and dropped the never particularly fun character from the comics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cisco on the show is so much better than Vibe in the comics ever was. And, you know, that actor brings so much to it. But I love that, you know, I thought that they were going to maybe eventually do something with his powers, and they're developing it in a really perfect way, I think.
Also, Jay Garrick.
Yep.
I've been a little disappointed with him. He's a little boring.
Yeah.
I don't buy the love story between him and Caitlin at all. I don't think they have any chemistry at all.
They're okay.
I think they're fine.
But I do like them building toward, what is it, Velocity 9?
Yep.
Which is where he gets his powers back. I'm ready for him to have his powers back. The moment where he had his powers I thought was really fun.
I think he's a fine actor. I have no problem with
him. The character hasn't had a lot to do.
Yeah. So Zoom remains a good bad guy.
Right. Super scary.
And here's my question.
Because Zoom will... We've seen him kill people. He has beat the crap out of Barry.
Yeah. He's scary. He's like Reverse Flash. He's better than him.
He's voiced by the Candyman.
He's voiced by the Candyman.
I love the voice.
Here's my question. Is he Hunter Zolomon?
No. I think that's a throwaway.
You think that's a Hank Henshaw?
Yes.
I think so, too.
I honestly think it's his dad.
I think it's likely. But here's what I thought was interesting. I love that they did that.
Oh, yeah.
That was a great way to reveal Jay Garrick's Earth One version of himself is Hunter Zolomon. I'm like, oh, that's a great little nod. And they're definitely – they want us all to be thinking, oh, well, he's Zoom.
Correct.
And I think you're right. I think that's a red herring. I don't think that's who it is. But I thought it was interesting. Okay. So let's get to Earth Two.
Right.
That was this last week's episode. Yeah. And tonight is part two.
Yay.
I loved the Earth 2 episode.
Oh, the Earth 2 was amazing. From the get-go, where Barry and Cisco are taking selfies in Star Labs to...
Well, it kind of captured the fun side of it.
Yeah.
It also looks neat. It's kind of like almost like retro-futuristic.
Well, I was going to say, I didn't realize it was going to be retro-futuristic.
Well, it makes sense.
Glimpses before and it was.
It makes sense because Justice Society always was the 1950s and all that kind of stuff. So it's got that style, but at the same time, it's technologically more advanced than us. So they have like old school looking phones that have that are wireless, that are in cars and stuff.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really nice blend of design. I thought the production design was really good.
And it allows them to do like CG when they do the city shots, but it's really good CG, and so it looks
I
like
the
just
the outfits were fantastic. And the stuff that Iris gets to wear, the stuff that Joe is sort of like, the 1920s era.
Yeah, they all have something like 20s, 30s, 40s looks to their clothes.
Joe gets to sing.
Yeah, now Joe, the actor who plays Joe, whose name I'm blanking on right now, he's a Tony winner. I mean, he was on Rent.
Yes.
And so to have him sing, of course, made perfect sense, and that was great. So him being a lounge singer, and Iris being a cop.
Right. So that was the big thing.
Not
really
a cop, but she was like the captain, wasn't she?
No, she wasn't the captain. She was.
She's pretty high up.
She was high up. She was like Joe. She's the detective.
Yeah. Partnered with a ineffective Deadshot.
Oh man, their take on their goofy Deadshot was so fun.
Which is kind of strange because I thought they couldn't use Deadshot.
Apparently they can.
Maybe they can use Floyd Lawton, but not Deadshot or something.
They call him Deadshot.
As an ironic thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was like.
But he's never been on Flash.
Yeah,
he was like the Barney Fife.
He definitely was.
Which is great.
We should say. The getting to Earth 2 was also notable. When they travel through the time stream, we saw glimpses of other timelines. They had done this once before and seen cool stuff in there. Yep. They throw in little Easter eggs for longtime DC readers.
Now, there were a bunch.
I only saw maybe two or three.
I spotted a couple, but I didn't see all of them.
The big one is Supergirl.
Supergirl's in there, yeah.
They glimpse Supergirl, which was super cool. Mm-hmm. If they, by the way, had left it till then, that's what I was thinking you were saying.
Oh, maybe, that would have been great.
So that you didn't find out about it, the crossover, until that moment, which probably was the case for people who don't follow, like, geeky news.
Right.
It's true.
Did I see a Legion ring?
Yes.
There was a Legion ring. There was Jonah Hex.
I did not see Jonah
Hex. Was Barry, there was the original John Wesley Shipp Flash.
Jonah Hex?
It was the first. It was one of the early things.
John watched the ship.
I mean, what
Flash
did you see?
Just a gunfighter.
But did he? It was clearly Hex.
Yeah, it was clearly Hex.
It was Gorilla Grodd.
Mm-hmm.
There was Connor Hawk.
Yep.
Jeez, how did I miss all this
stuff? I didn't see all this stuff. I only heard about it later. The only ones I noticed was Jonah Hex and Legion Ring. I didn't even see Supergirl.
I saw the Flash, and I was like, I can't tell what's different about him, but apparently that must have been the John Wesley Shipp 90s era Flash TV show.
Heard, and this is, again, those people who like freeze frame and watch every little thing, but apparently the emblem on John Wesley Shipp's suit was reversed.
Interesting.
So, which led to a lot of people are like, what does that mean?
That might have just been some...
Who knows?
They took some footage and they flipped it for whatever reason, but that may mean nothing. I think they just wanted to say the Flash of the 90s is just an alternate timeline version. Yeah. I think they were just having fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
I mean, they can't do anything. They can't have that actor de-age and play himself. I doubt they'd break out the old muscle suit.
I don't think so.
And then the rest of the episode had fun stuff. With an evil opposite for Vibe.
Oh man, he was great. And Daniel Pennebaker had a great time playing Killer Frost.
Yep. Yes.
And then Deathstorm.
Scary Firestorm.
Also, there was lots of little Easter eggs, like Barry's phone.
What was Barry's phone?
It had a speed dial for Hal, Diana, and Bruce.
Yes.
And Clark. Right? Or was it just Hal, Diana, and Bruce?
I think it was Hal, Diana, and Bruce.
And over in Legends of Tomorrow... Well, what is it? What's his name? Boasted that he's seen Dark Knight's Fall and Men of Steel die whatever. That was from
But the thing is, everybody wants all this stuff to be in continuity. It is clear that Barry Allen of Earth 2 has never met Superman, Wonder Woman, and Green Lantern.
True.
Because otherwise, he would not be super, super happy to meet like Harrison Wells.
Right.
Like, how is that a big deal once you've met those guys? So it was just a nod.
Yes.
But it was a cool nod.
But I mean... Yeah.
We live in a world where we get the cool nods, and then we also get some stuff that, like, legitimately happens, like the crossover with Supergirl and stuff like that. So it used to be that we never got anything, and a nod was the best you could hope for.
Yeah.
But they all said that there's an Aquaman there.
Yeah.
And Atlantis.
Atlantis,
and a few other things that make...
Honestly, I kind of want a spinoff set on Earth 2 now because it seems more overtly superhero.
It is to like because they got to costume it kind of with unusual clothes. They have to CG a lot of backgrounds, but I really like the look of it.
Well, here's the other thing: this was the highest rated episode of Flash.
Yes, it was.
Was it?
Huh? They got like 4 million viewers,
and I would imagine tonight's episode will be do even just better.
What's funny is that I would think that an episode where big dramatic things happen. would do better than an episode where I would say there's lots of fun, geeky insider stuff and Easter eggs and references to the comics. But we live in a world where that can be the big episode.
We live in Earth, too.
That's right.
Well, when we were at Alamo Drafthouse just doing our thing, there were crowds behind us talking about White Canary. And So, I mean...
Average dudes on the street now are talking about things that are insider, used to be insider.
Yep.
So...
And I don't want... Instead of being the hipster geek who's like, oh, it was cool before they were into it, I'm excited that people
are
into it.
I love the fact
that everybody knows what Rocket Raccoon is. That's cool as hell to me.
You can
be the gatekeeper, you can be the hipster, or you can be the guy who realizes this is great for everybody.
Yes.
All right. So before we get to Deadpool, one last thing. Dave, I know you played a board game.
Yeah, I played a game my brother picked up some months ago that I'd been wanting to try out, and finally did. He'd done it solo play, I think, called Robinson Crusoe.
Mm-hmm.
I think, is it from Z-Man Games?
Yes, I believe so.
And it's a cooperative game in the tradition of Pandemic and things like that, but a more complicated one. It's got lots of what I would say are more fiddly bits and stuff to do, and a board that takes a little bit of reading to kind of get your head around some of the stuff on it. But it is based on the famous novel of the same name, and at least loosely. And you play like in the 1700s, some people who've shipwrecked on an island. Each one of you, like in the tradition of cooperative games, plays somebody who's like, there's the cook, the explorer, the carpenter. You're somebody who can contribute to building your camp and stuff like that. And you, broadly speaking, have a span of, I think, a year to, in the basic thing, there's different scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
But in the main one, you want to survive the year, and you want to be able to build, like, a signal fire, which means collecting a lot of wood when ships are nearby.
Can you trade sheep for that wood?
Yeah, it is not Settlers of Catan. This game is, in fact, very friggin' hard. It's tough. And I'd heard it was tough, but it was actually a lot of fun, too. You are on your turn. It's sort of a worker placement game.
Mm-hmm.
We also played with the NPC of Friday, the native islander who helps him out. And there's also a dog, I believe, you can use as an NPC, too. And essentially, they can go out and do some other tasks that you aren't doing. But... You are out there exploring the island on your turn, or gathering resources. At the end of the, as the cook, I had certain special powers I could. That's what I played in the first one. It was a minor nice thing. Each card has two sides to it. One's a guy, one's a chick. So you get a gender options for all the characters.
Oh, that's nice.
I could do things like, if we didn't have enough food for the night. If I had some, there's little ways to get these sort of little bonus points in the game that mm-hmm. you can spend to sort of save your butt in tough situations. I could stretch some of the food out, like maybe that's called stone soup in that case, and get us through the night. Because at the end of the night, you see if everybody has enough food, if you can rest normally. And meanwhile, by the way, you could be hunted by wild animals. They have some neat mechanics where, like, first an animal is, like, stalking you, and then you fold it into the deck of potential threats, and the next time it turns up, it's, like, full-on cut loose.
Okay.
You got to build weapons. You got to build a shelter, because at a certain point, about, like, 6 or 7 months in, it starts to turn into fall, and you get heavy rains that'll hurt you, basically weaken you if you don't have a good shelter then. Then it's snow. And in the winter, when it's, like, snowy, also the wild animals are more dangerous, and you roll an extra dice each night to see if a wild animal attacks. So it gets really harrowing near the end, and by the end, my brother and I were like, okay, so let's just imagine that we hadn't rolled, like, the tiger, and we'll just see if we could survive to the end, and, if we could gather enough wood for the signal fire. We did that, like, 2 or 3 times, and we're like, okay, we've legitimately lost this game. But it was one of those enjoyable losses where we're like, okay, now we kind of have a sense of it, and we can, like, see how we can do much better next time, make better use of our time. There's a lot of different inventions you can build, so the game feels like it actually has a lot of different directions. And the alternate scenarios include stuff like cannibals on the island, ghosts that you have to set at rest. There's like one where you have to rescue somebody while a hurricane is bearing down on you. So it's pretty varied. Anyway, first test play was a lot of fun, but I'd recommend it for the more experienced gamers.
Okay,
it's more the Agricola crowd than the pandemic is at the toughest end crowd.
Okay. So now, if you have not seen Deadpool, the movie, and you're going to see it, and you don't want to be spoiled, This is the time when I would tell you to turn off the podcast and come back next time.
It's been a good week.
It's been a good week. So, if you are ready for your spoiler review of Deadpool, Nick, take it away.
All right. Now I'm going to hurt your ears because you... I don't think I have any plans to see this, and you hate Deadpool.
I think both Dave and I will probably see it when it comes to HBO. It's got enough good word about it.
And here's the thing. I actually think you both might enjoy this.
Well, I've seen a lot of reviews that seem to indicate that it's got some legit cleverness. It's a fun anarchic time.
Yeah. It is Bugs Bunny, Looney Tune, but with
I mean, we did see Kick-Ass, Randy.
That's true.
So it's better than Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
And I actually like Kick-Ass. I like Matthew Vaughn.
I'll say this. I had somebody say that I know you're boycotting it. I'm like, I'm not boycotting it. That is more of an active thing than I have. I just don't really have the time or interest in seeing it. So
I might boycott it. So.
but for those who like Deadpool.
For those who like Deadpool, if you have any love for the character, definitely go see it.
Give me a 1 to 5, Nick. Give me a 1 to 5.
I'd probably put it at around a 4.
Okay. That's pretty good.
Those saying that it's the best superhero movie ever, I think you may be overstating it.
Yeah.
They may be people with walls, they're wallpapered with Deadpool stuff in their
Correct.
Rooms.
That's completely possible.
Life-size Deadpool, body pillow.
Yes. Which I'm sure exists.
I'm sure exists.
No, but it's definitely an origin story.
Finally the origin story people have been wanting in the comics forever.
It's essentially, they give him an origin. I was actually surprised at the amount of time they spend on the love story between him and
Marina Baccarin,
who plays Vanessa, something who's actually Copycat, if you remember from who turns out to be. She makes a reference that is something very Copycatish in towards the end of the film, but she's not expressly have mimicking abilities or anything along those lines.
All right.
But they have a great chemistry. The sort of romance scenes. And the explicit nudity is fantastic.
I heard there's some surprising little moments of depth to their character.
Yeah, it is. And I have to just tune that to both of the actors. They did a great job. They loved what they were doing.
Did they both get naked?
Yes. There are many scenes where Ryan Reynolds is running around buck naked. You get to see his ass and maybe a little bit more.
Behold my jiggly parts.
Yes. He does make a reference to fondling the jiggly parts of Wolverine, so there's that. but they do make reference to Wolverine. There's stupid references to Wolverine origins that, you know, they're in the form of, like, his action figure and things that he messes with.
Right. And he does the fourth wall breaking.
He definitely breaks the fourth wall on, like, numerous occasions. The X-Men are included. He does go to the X-Mansion.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I heard, doesn't there a line where he's like, why is there only two of you here? It's like we didn't have money for all the X-Men.
It's almost like Fox didn't have enough money for another X-Men. and they have Colossus, and they have Negasonic Teenage Warhead. Which, crazy. I'm not wrong. She was a Morrison character, right?
I believe
almost
so.
Almost she has to be.
I think somebody, yeah, I think... It was his version of, what he thought some goofy kid would name himself.
Yeah, basically sort of a gothy, full of himself little teenager.
Yeah.
And she is Colossus's, like, protege or something. Okay. Which is interesting because he's very much pro-superhero, Wade, why are you doing this?
He's kind of a goofy, like a slightly, almost like tickish version of Colossus?
No,
or?
It is actually Colossus. I don't feel like they... doing completely over the top.
Okay.
He's very much sort of traditional.
But it's more like Bronze Age Colossus.
Yeah, Bronze Age Colossus. I'll give you that.
80s era.
Yeah, and there's all that. The interactions between those characters are actually a lot of fun.
Are the bad guys the people who did this to him?
Yeah, the bad guys are kind of very one-dimensional. They don't really matter. Yeah. It's some British guy, and then there's the MMA fighter. She was in...
Oh, Ronda Rousey? No. Gina Carano.
Yeah, Gina Carano.
Right. Who's in everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fast and Furious and stuff.
She gets to fight Colossus, which was actually kind of awesome.
Okay, I've seen that the clip that shows her fighting her and Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
Yes. But I think most people are more interested in the humor, and there is a lot of it. I was laughing out loud quite a bit. There's time jumps, flashbacks, sex jokes, all that stuff that you would imagine. But it's really done with a interesting view of things. It's the guy who did it was apparently one of the heads of an animation studio. This is his first movie that he's done. I think the studio is called Blur.
Guess he's got to be reasonably happy right now.
Tim Miller is his name.
Yeah, I would assume he's ecstatic by the sort of reception that he's receiving. No, and it's got a great eye. The animation is fantastic. The sort of animation they do on Deadpool's eyes is very, very sly.
Character cool. A la the 90s Batman.
I will say Weasel shows up. He's very funny, played by that actor.
T.J. Miller.
T.J. Miller. He's got some great lines. Blind Al shows up. She's hilarious. I thought Ryan Reynolds is sort of the cancer-ridden version. Okay. Actually, they made it pretty bad looking.
Yeah.
So it's definitely true to what the comic is.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. Did they, his particular fourth wall breaking, is that, do they just sort of introduce it as like he kind of got a little crazy from how all this came out? Or is there anything like more specific as to like, here's why he knows he's a character or whatever?
No, he just breaks the fourth wall.
All right. That's fine.
The craziness is just sort of all the sort of extremeness. Basically, to get to activate his mutant ability, he enlists into he gets cancer. He leaves Monitor, his girlfriend Vanessa, because he doesn't want to die in front of her, and enlists in sort of their version of a Weapon X type thing, which turns out to be sort of a mutant farming camp that basically just creates slaves, and they activate his mutant power by putting him through various tortures. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty horrific, actually, I will say. And, yeah, I think that sort of drives him insane. And the whole drive for this movie is for him to find a cure for himself.
Mm-hmm.
His skin and maybe a little bit of his insanity.
Okay.
And things don't go his way.
Okay.
So I was
wondering what they would do as the driving arc.
It starts from the very beginning. That scene that was the sort of test footage.
Yeah.
That was definitely used. That was part of the movie, instead of just being a random thing that they created.
Yeah.
It's all there. I thought it was highly enjoyable. They used great music cues from the 90s, Salt and Pepper and all that other random stuff. All
right.
It's got a lot of heart to it, and I think that is exactly what I wanted.
So, Nick, I want to know, you said there was an Easter egg with Cable?
Yes.
I heard about this from somebody who was exiting the theater. I was like, go ahead and tell me what
they've seen. We've covered the spoilers.
But I'll sort of Ferris Bueller. Ryan Reynolds comes out after the credits ends in Ferris Bueller attire, so he's got the robe.
Literally.
Nice. He's like, why are you all here? And then, you know, you go home, it's over. And then he comes back and he's like, well, I'm going to tell you a secret. Deadpool 2 is already in the works, but we're going to have Cable. And he's going to be like, it's the time-traveling crazy, all this Cable, we haven't cast him, but it might be this person, it might be this person, it might be Keira Knightley, we don't know.
So, as you showed me earlier, Nick, some people, the internet has already photoshopped up Keira Knightley as Cable.
So what is the other end credit scene?
Actually, I think that was the only thing.
There were two.
No, it was Bueller, and then they went back to the credits, and then they came back with the Cable thing, right?
Yes.
So there was a span between
And the end credits, there's some animation that's pretty hilarious throughout the entire thing.
Okay.
And, that one, actually, I really enjoyed.
So, for those who don't hate Deadpool,
that's true.
This might be a Deadpool movie you should see.
I'm going to say that's 99.8% of all people living.
And weirdly, it's only like 33% of the people in this room.
Well, I'm curious. The thing that makes me curious is,
if you were to bomb this room, you could take them all out.
Because I think
you'd have to lose Nick, but sorry.
We occasionally ran into the people when we were working Alamo that people didn't know who Deadpool was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's more people like that. My wife went to this. She knew nothing of what Deadpool was, who he was, what made him tick. She really enjoyed it.
She thought the ads looked fun and she wanted to see it.
Yeah, I mean, they were very clever ads. What got her was that Deadpool bought out all the ads on MTV for sponsoring Teen Mom, and it was nothing but Deadpool. So after, there are no commercials, just him.
I heard that about that craziness,
So, I think this is going to appeal to people and maybe get some people into sort of more comics wanting to know, so I kind of have to give them a little bit of credit.
We may want to bulk up on our Deadpool stuff.
I don't know if that's possible.
Yeah, when we tried to reorder last weekend, graphic novels we were, I think, okay on. Most of the merchandise, like pop vinyl Deadpool and stuff, mostly gone.
I just meant that we couldn't beef up because we already have a ton of it.
Oh, well, that's true. There is a fair amount there. And there are action figures on their way back.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. All right, that'll about wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week, and next week we'll talk about comics too.
Yeah.
But until that time,
Yo-Jo!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.